What about the clinical use of bendamustine? What's seen in terms of side effects and toxicity?
The primary side effects of bendamustine are myelosuppression, neutropenia, and thrombocytopenia. Depending on the study you look at, depending on the disease setting, will determine the frequency with which these occur. In fact, in one of the studies we did, the most common reason for patients coming off trial was grade 3-4 thrombocytopenia, but that was only in about 9 or 10% of patients. The drug also has some nausea and vomiting that can occur. It's a bit unpredictable, so we recommend that all patients get prophylactic antiemetics. Some patients sail right through it, and some have some fairly profound nausea and vomiting, but it's manageable, and it's rarely a reason to take patients off study. There is an infusional reaction that has been reported in a small number of patients, which is associated with fevers, chills, backaches, or muscle aches. In a couple of patients, the serum creatinine went up. This goes away when you stop the drug or if you administer corticosteroids. Whether there is an associated risk of secondary malignancies is not clear. As you already mentioned, there is an alkylating agent component to this drug. And in our two studies of single agent bendamustine in patients who were rituximab refractory, in one study we saw two cases of MDS and one case of chronic myelomonocytic leukemia. In the other study, we saw one case of MDS and one squamous cell carcinoma. This is out of 180 or so patients. And these are patients who had received, for the most part, prior alkylating agents, anthracyclines, and all sorts of other chemotherapy drugs. Some had received prior fludarabine, some had received prior stem cell transplantation. So it is not clear the relationship between the drug and these secondary malignancies. And obviously, this would become clearer in the setting of a randomized trial. And there are a couple of randomized trials out there in large numbers of patients with bendamustine. There's a CLL study which got the drug approved in the United States, which was Dr. Knopf's study. And that was a randomization between single-agent bendamustine and chlorambucil. And in fact, bendamustine had a higher complete and overall response rate, but more importantly was associated with a much longer progression-free survival. And the tolerability of bendamustine was comparable. In another study by Rummel and his coworkers, in previously untreated follicular and mantle cell lymphoma, patients were randomized to rituximab bendamustine versus R-CHOP. One would think intuitively that R-CHOP would have blown the socks off of R-bendamustine, but in fact, that's not what happened. The response rates and complete remissions were identical, over 90% response rate in both arms, and the progression-free and overall survival were superimposable between the two arms, and bendamustine was much better tolerated than was R-CHOP. Longer follow-up is needed for definitive conclusions about the study and also to address the question of, is there more secondary malignancy risk in a bendamustine-treated patient than, for example, in a CHOP-treated patient.
Now, how did that regimen of R-bendamustine compare to the R-bendamustine regimen of the paper we just discussed?
One of the unfortunate issues with bendamustine is we don't know the optimal way to administer the drug. In the two U.S. trials, the dose was 120 milligrams per meter squared, days 1 and 2, every 3 weeks. In the two trials, the German trial and the U.S. trial, combining bendamustine with rituximab, it was 90 milligrams per meter squared, given every 4 weeks. In another study in CLL, in the Knopf study, it was 100 milligrams per meter squared. In a study by Fisher combining bendamustine with rituximab in CLL, it was 70 milligrams per meter squared. If you look at the very limited phase 1 data, the recommended doses range anywhere from 60 milligrams per meter squared to 150 milligrams per meter squared. I suspect that the dose will differ based on a number of features, the disease, what it's combined with, the patient population, I suspect that an every 4-week regimen will be the one that is most widely used. It appears to be as effective as an every 3-week regimen and is clearly less toxic.